Incoming pitch. Spin rate of 2,500 RPM, 95.6 miles per hour.
Adjusting swing. 12 degrees. Proceed with launch angle.
Your co-host here of the Launch Angle Podcast. You can find me on Twitter at @thatcohitter. I'll be bringing in Jeff Zimmerman and Rob Silver very shortly. We're going to be talking about some of the most recent injuries in MLB and how it's been impactful for fantasy reasons. We'll talk about Mike Trout, Thairo Estrada, Royce Lewis. We're going to get into some Minding the News segments from Jeff Zimmerman's articles on Fangraphs, talking about the automatic ball and strike system in the minors and how it's kind of affecting our analysis of pitchers in AAA and when they come up into the majors. Especially when it comes to walk rate, we'll be talking about Trey Turner and some of the statements he made about his leg kick and not being able to use it because the hitting coach didn't want him to. We'll be talking about how to handle the Seattle Mariners pitchers, Brian Wu and Bryce Miller in your fantasy leagues. We'll be talking about Miguel Vargas and his recent playing time reduction, as well as what it looks like underneath the hood for his skill set. We're talking about Coby Allard, Graham Ashcraft, as well as what we're going to do into the All-Star break, how we're going to spend some time either peeling away from the game or diving into things that we can't get to during the season. And I think you'll enjoy this episode. We also talk a little bit about drafting players and maybe having some regrets on the whole theory of why would I take this player here when I could take such player there, and maybe some of the reasons why we could have reversed that thinking in some of the picks that we made in draft season. So and then we have half of our episode, we're going to be on to the Pull Hitter Podcast Patreon, where you'll find 2 launch angles per month there. Come check it out if you want. It's free week trial you get over on Patreon. Just search Pull Hitter, or it's on my pinned tweet. And you can come check it out for a week into the entry tier, where you get the other 2 launch angle podcasts. You get my daily podcast where I go through the box scores and try to unearth some of the lesser known players, the lesser talk about players in fantasy baseball. I think you'll like it. Come check it out and support the work that we do over there as well. Hope everyone enjoys this episode.
Here's the pitch.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. I'm Rob DiPietro. I'm here with Jeff Zimmerman, Rob Silver. What's up, going? What's up, fellas? How was your 4th of July, Canada Day? How was all that stuff for you guys? Did you guys celebrate aptly?
Yeah. I think my kids still kind of like blowing stuff up and seeing stuff blow up.
USA.
So. Yeah.
USA.
Exactly. So I just sit around and I give them a wad of cash and let them go in the tent and pick what they want out. And we shoot it and they're happy. And I think they would always want more. But like I said, we do that. And we got enough other neighbors that are more ambitious than us. And we watch their stuff blow up. And it's over. Just a good reason for me just to drink beer all day is pretty much all I did. So
we call that a Wednesday around these parts here.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have 2 questions for you guys. My Canada Day was fine. It was lovely. It was relaxing. First off, Rob, you were at a concert last night. I got from the Discord you were not at a Backstreet Boys concert. You were not at a NSYNC concert. You were not at any boy band concert. It was not clear to me what concert you actually were at, though. What did you go see last night?
So I have this thing called the Lawn Pass by me. It's the PNC Bank Art Center, and I have an amphitheater with the lawn. So basically you have access to every single concert they have in the lawn, which is pretty cool. You pay one flat fee, and you can, at that point, once you've seen bands you've liked, you could just saunter over to see any live, you know. So last night was the Counting Crows, the band that I loved growing up.
Oh, yeah. And they 1995 called. They wanted their hits back. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Well, they can keep them because me and my brother walked out. 5 songs.
It was that good.
5 songs in. It was embarrassing.
Did they open with Mr. Jones, play Mr. Jones 3 more times, and then close with Mr. Jones?
Listen, they opened with Round Here, which is one of their biggest hits. Yeah. Mr. Jones was 3rd, and then Omaha was 5th. Basically, their 3 biggest hits from that album, and he fucked them all up. It was spoken word.
Was he like drunk?
No, it was, I mean, he looked terrible. He looked disheveled. And I know there's a thing about his live thing. He's got a whole spiel about it. He doesn't care how it comes out or what songs he plays. He's the musician. You show up. That's it. But it was spoken word over music.
And it was, it killed the effect of people singing to it too, because no, everyone was looking around like, well, what do we do? Because we're trying to sing the words of the song. And he was just basically, you know, Mr. Jones, you know, like that basically how he was singing it. It was just speaking it out. And like, we're talking here. And I was like, all right, I knew there was no way I'd come back from it. You know, like there's no, you don't have any songs left that it's going to overcome what I'm feeling now. So I looked at my brother and he's like, I'm okay if you want to go. I'm like, see ya.
I guess that's a great thing. It didn't cost you anything to be there. So like you have, it's not even, I know it's a sunk cost, but you pay $100 for a concert ticket. You feel like you kind of have to give it a shot. Whereas this literally cost you just your time.
And that's what I was most upset about for the people who like, you know, like go to one or two concerts a year and they like, you know, let's go see the Counting Crows. I love this band. And for me, it was just like, because I had this pass, me and my brother's like, sure, let's go, you know? And oh my God. So I feel bad for those people. I just wanted to on Twitter this morning to see if anyone was tweeting about it. Best concert ever, hashtag Counting Crows forever. And I'm like, oh my God, how did you clap during that? But anyway. That's enough.
And then my question for Jeff is, people can't see this, so this isn't great podcasting. Are you recording from your bomb shelter? Like, where the hell are you? This is your fallout shelter, right? Like, you're a survivalist, and you've got canned goods and, like, weapons to survive the zombie apocalypse down there?
No, I'm actually traveling with family, and I needed to get away from everyone. So I just went down in the basement. Now I'm hiding down here. While everyone
Rob, am I wrong?
That oh, no, it looks like he's that way.
In a bomb shelter right now.
I thought maybe he was on break from doing like an HVAC install. And I was like, oh, he just sat down like he just installed some ducts in the basement. It's like, all right, let me do my fantasy baseball.
I point you all that stuff
What's the over under on how many snakes will come and get you during the this podcast in that basement you're in right now, Jeff? Just give us some odds, and we're going long today. We're gonna do a double because we missed last week.
I'm gonna go
and
zero
we'll see by the end whether you've nailed it or not.
No, I'm gonna go low on that. But if there's some mammals running around here, I'm not gonna be surprised. If there's like a possum comes across, or some mice, possum, or anything like possum. That.
Mice don't bother
raccoon.
Me. Raccoon. I do not like having raccoons in the house. Raccoons are like trash panda. The trash pandas are, anyways, they're my nemesis. I don't want them in the house. Not because I'm afraid of them. It's not like snakes. They're just vicious animals who will destroy your home.
Yeah.
And they're not leaving. Once they get in, they are not leaving.
Yeah, this is kind of a bad little entryway kind of door thing, like you always see, and like that's where they hide, like the bodies like coming down, and that area is always kind of a little iffy if it actually keeps everything out. So I'm just hoping nothing moved when I came down here. So I'm just hoping not during the middle of it something starts going around.
Well, if we get a possum, it'll be the Possum Podcast, and it'll be a first of its kind for sure. Okay, so let's spin around some quick recent injuries in MLB and just talk about maybe which one could be the most impactful, whether these guys are drops, holds, and who benefits from them going down. Let's start off with Mike Trout. It's 4 to 8 weeks, they've said. Basically, I think you can eliminate, you know, this week coming up as being the All-Star break week. So that's kind of a wash. You don't lose too many games there, but is this like an obvious hold, right, in most leagues? And I guess who benefits the most? Is it Mickey Moniak? Is it the infielders that can kind of maybe grab up some additional DH spots? What do you think, Jeff?
He's a hold for now. I think there's maybe 1-2% of leagues that he may be a drop. Like, you just have too much else going on and you have to have someone move in. I don't know if he's at this point must. Like I said, must hold. Like, what he provides, you might be able to piece together with some other ones, or you have to just have some bodies. As for the outfield, they brought up Adele and he's played a little bit. I don't know if I see him being a big ad this weekend. I don't, mm-hmm. I think you really need to check in on the playing time on how that works out. I think that that's going to be kind of, I'm kind of worried that everyone's just going to, they're just going to continue the whole have four outfielders and three play, and none of them are really that great if they kind of need all the playing time. So it's one, I think really like on Sunday, you really just need to look in, or if that's when you do your fab or whatever, like who's getting the most playing time out of the situation, or if someone is actually pulling the full-time role. It's just too early to say right now, I hate to say.
So I think in 12-team leagues, Mike Trout, you can make an argument, is droppable, which doesn't mean he must be dropped, like cut him, get him off your team. But in 12-team, in OCs, in 12-team leagues or anything shallower than that, if you need the roster spot, I think that you can add – it's go time right now. So I don't – I think, like, look, we saw last year, 6 weeks of Mike Trout can still be a beautiful thing. And it's possible it happens. But given what the injury is, I hate hand injuries for power hitters, right? Like, so you, there's no guarantee he comes back and he is immediately Mike Trout. So in a 12-team league, I do think you can cut him if you have a crunch. 15, it's just so hard to cut him. Like, can you? Of course, it's your team. You can do whatever you want, but I think you sort of have to hold him. The Angels lineup is horrendous when you take Mike Trout out of this. I'm not dodging the question who benefits, because I know, like, anybody who's getting full-time plate appearances, you have to be considering, you have to be looking at it, because there's just so many platoon guys. But holy shit, that's a bad lineup. And I'm not trying to minimize how hard a choice this is. Are they really going to lose Ohtani for a draft pick? Like, is that like now inevitable that they're just not going to trade Ohtani this, like, in the next month, 3 weeks, whatever it is, and they're going to get a draft pick for Shohei Ohtani on a team that you take, like, it's horrendous when you take Mike Trout off of it, but Mike Trout's not going anywhere. He's there for the long haul. You take Ohtani off this team, they're a bad team. So again, you, like, trading Ohtani is not an easy thing in real baseball, because, like, it's such a big decision, and he's such a tough player to properly value and get value back. But, like, a Reds or a Baltimore or any team in baseball would give up real assets for 2 months of Ohtani, because he solves two problems for every team. I think they have to do it, because this is really a bad team. I don't know that I want any of the hitters on the Angels right now if I can avoid it, other than Ohtani, because it's a really crappy situation.
I think it makes sense, because they don't want to be viewed as the team that trades Shohei Ohtani, right? The greatest player on earth, just they get rid of him. But they do need to supplement the team with something. I think Moniak probably. I don't know. He's the only one who's played center besides Trout this year, so I'm guessing that's the biggest benefit for him. But I would agree with you, Rob. Just looking up and down the roster, it's like, how many times can you roll out David Fletcher and Andrew Velasquez? And obviously, Zach Neto can come back and supplement that. But it's been really bad besides those guys at the top of the lineup. I don't know if you guys remember, you know, obviously all those. You know, Steamer has no idea what they're talking about tweets, the projection suck tweet, and everyone was livid when Mike Trout was, how can Steamer be projecting him for 254 average? He's never hit under 280 in his whole life, and he's sitting here at 263, and I just wish I hope we still get a little bit more of a sample size, just to kind of get, you know, those tweets back out there, because I thought that was... It's something that sticks in my mind. You know, obviously those, you know, the Steamer doesn't know what they're talking about tweets. They're always interesting to look at, because no one looks at what they got right. Everyone just wants to look at what projections get wrong, you know? Yep. All right, let's move over to Tyro Estrada, Royce Lewis. Looks like Tyro's going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks. Who do you guys think picks up most of the slack from the Giants? They're always a mess, but do you guys have any insight onto maybe who can benefit the most from his absence? Jeff?
I don't think there's anyone rosterable. We don't know exactly how the platoons are yet. Me, just looking at, looks like Schmidt's the short. No, he may be the one. He's played like the last couple games at second. And it's against a righty and a lefty, like they haven't platooned it. So maybe he is the one, like, since they haven't done the platoon, I kind of thought they might with Flores. And then also, with Flores.
We're still reluctant to get Wilmer Flores more PAs this year. It's been one of my Like, it's not that he's an all-star, but he just seems like he's getting no continuous at-bats. It's just kind of puzzling to me.
Yeah, it's just, I kind of thought that there would be a little bit, Wisely was the other one that they kind of have, but it looks like they may give Schmidt, like I said, we've got two games to go off of. That's always kind of like the issue. It's like, oh, we've got, Wisely, yeah, just a few games to kind of go off of for this weekend, but I may take a thing at Schmidt if you're in a 15. I don't know if he's good enough to play in a 12. I just don't think that he has the talent right now to be rosterable there. But like in a 15 where anyone, any full-time at bat is pretty much in consideration, I think Schmidt's probably the only one.
I assume Schmidt's a good fielder because he's not a good hitter. So I assume he's in the majors because of his glove. He projects at least to be a well below average replacement level, whatever you want to use, hitter. So, you know, if you're the Giants, that may be okay, and they'll platoon a bunch and they'll figure it out. But for fantasy, I hope you can find a better option at middle infield than Schmidt's Creek here, because that's what you're getting from Corey Schmidt.
Yeah, he hasn't been great. 592 OPS on the season. Just everyone, you know, I think a lot of the thing about him was whether he had any thump in his bat, and he came off right off the bat, hit like a 111, you know, ball. And everyone's like, oh, he's got the power. Stop questioning it. He did it in the major league, and he hasn't shown anything since then. The weak bat. Yeah. What about on the Twins end? Do you guys trust Minnesota at all anymore? I just can't seem to get this team right. They put in Gallo and Kepler versus lefties, then they bench him versus a righty. They're doing these reverse splits. These aren't like, I don't know. I'm done with them. Kepler, I dropped, and then he went on fire, and I had a chance to get him back, and I'm like, I don't even want to bother with it because I know he'll hit 5 homers in 2 weeks and then get benched for 3 straight games because that's what Paul Dele does. But has anyone stick out? Oh, you, Jeff, on the Twins? Is it Kyle Farmer maybe to get some run?
No one. I think a lot of people went with Miranda. I think he had a lot of hype with the prospects, but he just hasn't done anything. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of staying away. Like I said, there for a while I was adding Taylor, but he's now losing at bats to Castro in center field.
Yep.
I guess so. Taylor kind of needed those full-time at bats to kind of be useful. Since he's buried, like if he was hitting leadoff, I think it'd be better, but he's buried at the bottom of that lineup, and it's not a good lineup at the bottom. So he's just not getting the counting stats to go with his steals and home runs, and he's a dragging batting average. So they're just not good enough to be part-time players to be worthwhile this year. So just it's kind of what the platoon bats, like, just have to get good platoon bats, not those guys.
You don't think Edouard Julien is going to finally stick this time around? This year's Oliveras going up and down. The only guy who could benefit, but there's a big little asterisk on him, is Jorge Polanco. So I think that stashing Polanco over the All-Star break, if you have room, might not be the worst move in the world for, like, and I'm talking for like a dollar. I'm not saying go bust your bank and just be ready to be like, have no expectations. The expectation is this is a write-off year for Polanco, and he's never going to get healthy, and you'll just cut him and move on. He was doing sprints last week or 3 days ago or something. There's a big difference, as everybody knows, between sprinting and being able to play Major League Baseball games. But the Twins are right there, and their pitching is so good. Like, you look at their pitching statistics. They have the best starting rotation statistically so far this year in baseball. And that's anyways, you and Motika can talk about that, Rob. We don't talk about pitchers here. But no, their rotation's been great. They just need an average lineup. And in a, like, the one of the worst divisions in baseball history, they can win this division. I'm just not sure they can get to an average lineup on the Twins. A healthy Jorge Polanco would help them do that. I'm skeptical. But he's the guy who, if he could get healthy, I think has the potential. Again, I don't think he will be healthy this year. But if he is, he'll play every day because they really need him.
I agree. I stashed him in one of my auction leagues last week. I picked him up. And I'm just hoping that, yeah, he's the guy that gets the full-time run. Yeah, every time he's come back from an injury, he hasn't been platooned or anything. But maybe they're like, okay, maybe we need to keep you healthy, and we do start doing that. But I agree with that move. And it's just a mess on that team. I'm staying everything away. Donovan Hilano always comes into the picture at some point and bats 700 for a week, and then everyone goes to race him, you know, to pick him up, and then he doesn't get played. It's just enough with the Twins.
I've never seen like the Giants, obviously, and Tampa do lots of platooning. I've never seen a team where they put out a lineup against an opener and then pinch hit like in the first inning on guys. And it's like, what are you doing? You don't have a 9-man bench. Like you've put yourself in a position where you literally can't make another move the rest of the game when you do that with two of your players. You have a backup catcher basically left on your bench. It's bizarre the way they're managing some of these things, or over-managing some of these things.
I would 100% agree with that. All right, let's hit some items on Jeff mining the news. I want to go back to the June 27th one, Jeff, when you talked about AAA pitchers struggling with the automatic called balls and strikes, and how that maybe translates into the major league, just trying to dissect all the information that we have on minor league pitchers.
Yeah, the weird thing, this is like never happened ever, is that pitchers gain, their walk rate improves going from AAA to the majors. Like, it's usually like it gets a little bit worse because the hitters are better. And that's like they're almost gaining one walk per nine. It improves that much going to the majors. So it's one of those deals that if someone is struggling with walks down in the minors, they might actually kind of improve, and it's really tough. I think it's messed with me a little bit evaluating guys, because it's like, oh my god, he's walking this much in the minors, it's just going to get worse in the majors. And it's like, no, it's actually going to improve. So I think the one thing is just kind of focus on their strikeouts right now, and you don't have to start them. You can kind of see how things go. But I think that there were some guys like Reese Olson and Wu for Seattle. I can't think of his first name right now.
Just Wu. Right. There aren't three Wus in baseball right now, Jeff. When you say Wu, everybody knows who you're talking about.
But they had struggled a bit. And there were some other ones too. And I think it just really screwed with me evaluating some guys. And I think that's one thing that the automatic balls and strikes – That's like the one difference. There's only one reason it was coming out this way. So I find it's just one thing that you just have to kind of remember this year when guys come up. And it'll be interesting to see. I think it's going to – I don't know if it'll be next year, but we're going to get – we're not going to get the full automatic one, but I bet we get the challenge one here soon. I kind of like to see – I've seen how it works in the minors, and I really like it. It doesn't really change much. You just do it for three or four pitches during the game, and – it's just really for really egregious calls.
Hey Jeff, do you know if Derek Cardi and the bat have realized this and made an adjustment in terms of his MLEs for minor league pitchers coming up?
I have not talked to him about that.
Okay, if you could do that for us and let us know on a future podcast whether or not the bat has been.
We'll see if we can get there today.
Sure.
You two talk a lot, and I'll get.
Between DiPietro and me, we'll have a tough time filling dead air while you're messaging Cardi, but I'll try to stretch. I think this is one of, like, there's lots of valuable things that Jeff finds as he's searching through all the crap that he has to go through to get this. I think it's a huge piece of info. It'll be interesting if this becomes common knowledge in the off season, because that's a lot of when we kind of get to step back and evaluate minor league pitchers as people start doing DCs and so on, or not. And like so many things, if people overcorrect for it and assume the guy who has like a 17% walk rate, oh, he's going to be in the minors in AAA. Oh, he's going to be fine in the majors with his 17% walk rate because, you know, umpire ball and strikes, and it's like, nope, it's not going to help him about that much in the majors.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I I remember reading it and like, oh man, this is, I guess I never, you know, you don't think about it too much because like you said, Rob, we had so much to think about going through every week normally. Then this little tidbit, it's pretty interesting. And I'd like to see how it's going to look next year. And like you said, I wonder how projections are going to handle something like that. So many things that we're constantly having to adjust every single year. Another thing in that Mining News article that really took me aback about Trey Turner, he said that he went back to a small leg kick. And the quote from Turner was, well, when you want to leg kick all year and your hitting coach won't help you leg kick, it's hard to hit the ball hard. Then you get the leg kick right. It just made me think, like, can players not do what they want to do?
It is weird.
I caught that, like, it really stung me for a while. I was so mad. I'm like, what do you mean? And it's like, you know, and I read the Swing Kings book, and I, you know, there were several hitters in there talking about how the organizational, you know, on the top down, it's always, you know, hit the ball hard, like, don't swing like this, don't do that. And that's why, like, Justin Turner was like, first, like, no, nah, fuck this. This is what I'm doing. This is my career. This is my, you know, livelihood. I'm going to swing how I want to. Like, and that's it, you know? And I just think that's really, I don't know. It was an interesting comment that kind of took me aback as are they not the owners of themselves, even as they play. It's just a weird remark. I don't know if you have any different opinion, Rob, or just feel like, you know, like, what can these players do and what can they not do? It's just odd to me.
Yeah, I think I was shocked when I read that too. I understand teams pushing struggling guys, like, have you considered trying this? Have you considered trying this? I've never heard of a team like prohibiting certain parts of a swing. It's a swing. They just signed him to like one of the biggest contracts in baseball history, and now you say, like, you just can't do what you want, Trey. We don't trust you as a hitter. It's a weird organization. It's a weird organizational thing. I imagine it differs wildly team by team. But these guys are going to, like, Driveline. Like, they're going to seek outside experts. Are they saying, like, it's, anyways, very odd, very odd. And it's also, it'd be interest. Yeah. Very odd. I don't know what else to say about it. It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
If anyone wants to kind of read the whole article, it goes through, I know that, like, they even try to make the change in spring training that, whatever the coach was, is like with the bigger leg kicks, like, they just wanted it simple. Like they want everyone to swing like Mike Trout. It's like, or a Miguel Cabrera peak, like, just stand there and just be able to go with it. The one thing I've read, and I think if someone was like in DFS, they could take advantage of it. There's just nothing we can do, is the guys with the big leg kicks just getting eaten up by like Nestor Cortez. Cause he just, like, their timing on their leg kick, like, it's all a big timing thing. And if he can kind of get them to lift that leg up, he's got him screwed. Cause he's basically like, well, I can just kind of pivot around up here for a little bit. And then or Cueto, where they just kind of do different things to try to get that leg kick. That's a lot of times you'll see when Cueto or Cortez kind of move around, they know the guy's got a leg kick and they're just trying to get them started on that early.
Right. No, it's such a good point. I know that Christian Yelich just dropped his right and went to a simple toe tap, and he's just had, you know, he's been on fire since he made that change. And
whatever he's doing, keep doing it, man.
Keep doing it, baby. Keep this doing year,
this year's Christian Yelich, as it turns out, is Christian Yelich.
As it turns out, absolutely, totally right. All right, I want to talk a little bit about the Seattle Mariners pitching situation. Jeff, you noted in your Mind in the News article this week about, you know, how they're going to slow roll Brian Wu out of the All-Star break. You know, Kirby last year, they shelved him from, I think, from, sent him down from what, July 8th to July 26th. He came back to give him some, you know, some innings, save his innings cap. How do you, and plus now Bryce Miller has this blister on his finger. How do you think they're going to approach coming out of the All-Star break, and how should we approach handling Brian Wu and even Bryce Miller?
I think with Wu, I think Seattle's like, Wu's good. We want him for the playoffs, and they've worked back. This is how much we want. If we win the World Series and still want Wu, this is how much he's going to have to pitch. And then they're like, okay, we only can give him like 3 weeks coming into there to warm up, and where he's just gonna be like a bullpen arm and throw like one inning a week or whatever. Like, Seattle's got that plan to win the World Series. That's their goal. Once they're out of the playoffs, I think they just throw Wu full amount let him go, use up his innings, and he's done. We won't know what's going to happen, but you can probably guess where they stand in the playoffs. Like, I still think they consider themselves a playoff team. So they want Wu to be able to pitch in the playoffs in a game. He may not be their top one, but I think they want him there. With Bryce Miller, and Wu hadn't thrown many innings, like, he's going to be kind of limited. Like, he's definitely going to be the one. With Miller, I think he's just going to keep throwing, like, once he gets healthy. I think you just have to hold him, and he's just going to, once he comes back, just run out his innings. They may slow roll him a little bit, but I think actually this injury kind of kills any, gives him the rest he needs. Like, they're just going to have the innings. He had thrown a lot more than Wu last year. So I think he's going to be, he'll be fine, in my opinion. Maybe it'll stop. And it's also going to be the playoff bit. Like, oh, he's got his innings. He's done. They shut him down for the last 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I don't know what Jerry DePoto's smoking, but the Mariners aren't making the playoffs as of right now. And if they want to have a shot, like, they're a 500 team. If they want to have a shot at the playoffs, they need to win now. They don't need to save their bullets for October because they'll be, unless they're going shooting with Jeff, they're not going to be shooting anything then. So it's different than the Marlins, for example. Right now, the Marlins have the first wild card spot. They're in a really good position. So I understand if I'm the Marlins starting to think about how do I make sure Uri can make a start or two in the playoffs. The Mariners, they just need wins. And their odds of winning games, I think, I haven't run the numbers, maybe Jeff has, are higher with Wu than they are with Marco Gonzalez. And... So I if I'm them, I try to win as many games right now as I can and deal with the playoffs if it happens to happen down the road. That doesn't mean that's what they're going to do, though. That's what I would do, but I'm not Jerry DePoto, needless to say. So, like, for fantasy, you just have to suck it up and every week see, are they pitching? If they're pitching, you start them. If you don't, then you don't. Like, see, don't worry. Long-term Dave McDonald will tell you after the fact whether that he nailed it on whether they were starting or not. So just check his feed. As RotoWire posts something, he will retweet you. Like, he's just trying to help you out. So that would be what I would do, is so you don't miss it, go to his Twitter feed and he'll tweet out the information for you to be able to make the best decisions. Just wants you to do as well as you possibly can.
I love having people like that available to get better at fantasy from.
They just want to help.
FanGraphs has, a Mariners has a 21% chance of making a playoff. That just seems like a little too high for me right now.
Well, look, I mean, if you take the Angels out of it, if you assume with the Trout, I think the Angels are always inflated because if you give Trout and Ohtani full-time playing appearances, it's just a lot of war and it's just like a lot of wins. But if you take the Angels down, they need to pass one of the teams ahead of them. It's possible. Like, the Mariners' rotation is really good. It's like, you and Modica talk about it all the time. Their rotation's like fantastic when everybody's going, but that doesn't include Marco Gonzalez.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Okay, let's hit on the platoon situation here, possibly with Miguel Vargas of the Dodgers. Jeff, what do you think of Vargas overall, his season so far? It seems like everything is not terrible. The results haven't been great. You know, he's hitting a ton of fly balls, but you know, he's still got good swing decisions, good plate discipline. Do you think that platooning him is the right thing to do if the Dodgers go down that route?
The deal is they're not really playing him all the time. It wasn't like a straight platoon right now, but that's right. Kind of the issue I ran into. I had I liked his like versatility and had him in a bunch of 12s. He's in on every waiver wire. It just wasn't enough playing time. And I felt like I can move on or I'll stream him. I just didn't know when he was not going to play. And he wasn't like lighting on fire. I think he's someone like in a 15s or in a DC. I mean, you're just still rolling him out there. And just whenever he plays, he's there. But God, just frustrating sometimes. It's like, oh, he's got a nice 4-game week and he's only playing twice. And then he just, shits the bed in those two games, and it's just like he's just a really frustrating player, and there's really not like he goes on like some great hot streak. It's just kind of like, oh, hey. And so I think he's got a great chance, and it's someone I'll take a chance on next year. He's so young right now. I think some of those guys that are young and people just they hit the league just probably way too early. There's just a good chance he can grow. Like, he's got a nice base, but it's God, I just wish he was playing every day.
And there's a good chance that his hand still hurts, right, from him getting hurt in spring training or right before spring training. That can also be a thing that's bothering him as well. Give up, die.
Yeah, he also just has been one of the most unlucky hitters in baseball, right? Like, if you just take his BABIP and go from 226, and he's not Kyle Schwarber, he's not Mac Muncy, like, he doesn't have a history of horrendous BABIPs anywhere. He doesn't project to be that guy. But if you take it and move it up to 300, everything about Vargas is suddenly exactly what we expected coming into the year when people were so excited about Vargas as a hitter. And the Dodgers are smarter than I am, I think it's fair to say. So they know that. So it wouldn't surprise me if he has a really nice run in the second half. If Vargas is available on waiver wires, he's totally a guy that I try to buy off of the trash heap and keep on my bench until he gets going again. And I think he could have, like I said, a really nice second half. Will he play every day? Like, we need to get back into a mindset where, or remind ourselves that when the Dodgers can, they don't play anybody except their stars every day. And he's not one of their stars every day. The problem at the beginning of the season was they just didn't have any depth to be able to do it. But this is who they are, right? Like, this is who they've been. Max Muncy doesn't play every day, and Muncy is a better real player than Vargas is. So, like, you just need to be happy if he gets going that he's going to play on like a 500 plate appearance pace, not a 600 plate appearance pace. But in that Dodgers lineup, when it's clicking, that could still be plenty good for fantasy.
The problem is he's like on a, even over the last 2 weeks, he's like on a 300 plate appearance pace.
No. He needs to get going. So, like, yeah. It's one thing for me to say, I think just his BABIP needs to correct and it will all get going. The reality is his BABIP isn't just correcting. And in real baseball terms, it's hard to play a guy every single day who's hitting under 200. Like, I get why the Dodgers are cutting it down. And I'm not suggesting you should have him in your lineup every day. I'm saying he's a guy I wouldn't mind having my hooks into if he's free on my bench in case things get better.
Yeah, they don't need to play Betts at second base, or maybe he needs to get up to 20 games for next year. It's like, yeah, you don't need to play him at second base anymore.
Yeah, he's 91% owned in the main events right now, Vargas, and 56% owned in the 12-team OC. So definitely an even opportunity in the main events for some teams to stash him until he possibly can get going PT-wise, because I think he started 6 out of the last 10 games. It's, like you said, Jeff, it's, you get excited for those four-game weeks on several DCs. I'm like, all right, well, I'm just going to roll him out again and, you know, get a guy with 3 games like a Julian versus two righties he's going to play, hit the home run. You're like, well, maybe I should have went with him, you know? And it's just, it's difficult trying to get into that game every weekend with Vargas recently. But I still have hope for him. I think he can turn around for the rest of the season as long as he gets the PT. Jeff, in your Big Kids article, I just wanted to talk about a couple of pitches and get your guys' opinions on Colby Allard and Graham Ashcraft. Did Graham Ashcraft, have you seen anything that he's done differently that makes you think that he can turn around from his disaster of the start of a season? And has Colby Allard, you know, anything worth our fantasy time given, you know, the I'm not going to use the word pedigree, but I just said it. But, you know, his prospect potential and the fact that he's back on the Braves now, the team that originally drafted him.
Starting with Ashcraft, I don't think there's anything there. He has 2 pitches. He throws a third one, but it's just horrible. So he's kind of got the effect of a 2-pitch pitcher. He just gets destroyed the second and third time through the order. He doesn't make it to the third time order that much, but his K percentage minus walk percentage drops from 22% the first time to 6%. They said that they changed his pitch mix around and there's some like classification issues, but it's really, he's still doing the same thing, trying to just throw sinkers down, and it's just not working for him. I'll have to see some more. Like I said, he'll get a couple good games and it'll look good, but
I'd love to see him throw like three good games together once, and then I'd buy back in. For Allard, like, where the hell did this come from? Like, he has been so bad for so long. If you'd have said, like, Coley Allard was coming in just, like, to pitch for the Braves, I'd just been like, okay, whatever. Like, they're just going to use him as a starter or something. But he did – like, he hasn't been around when all the pitchers kind of made this whole, like, just quit throwing your shitty pitches and throw all your good ones better. And that's basically how he's – what he's doing now. And it's working. So – I don't know how long it's last. Maybe since he's only thrown like 15 total innings. I mean, that's one issue. It's like, well, it hasn't been much, but the Braves have trusted him to get thrown in there and to kind of pull some starts here. I don't know if he'll totally stay, but what we've seen so far is good. And I picked him up in a few places. I didn't start him. I didn't really trust it, but it's like, I don't have time to wait 2 months to see if this is the real him or not. But he's not walking anyone. He's striking everyone out. He's got a new mix. I'm buying in with a chance, and we'll see where it goes from there. But, yeah, I wouldn't have ever even considered him even on, like, a DC. Like, there was just nothing there. He almost had, like, a career 6 ERA. So it was, like, a hard pass until these changes, and we'll see where it goes.
I think you nailed it by saying too. Sorry, Rob. Yeah, go ahead. You don't have time to wait, and really in the NFBC you don't, right? you either get that guy that week, or someone's gonna speculate, you know, as soon as they see it. Go ahead, Rob. Sorry.
Any word, guys, on how Ashcraft's Stuff Plus numbers are looking lately? Have they moved a lot? I think. Rob, you and Modica have used the words Stuff Plus Darling every single time you have talked about Ashcroft, which is every single week you talk about him. So I'm not interested at all in him. I mean, I think if Allard were on Milwaukee or Detroit, I would have very little interest in him. The reality is, and I'm not trying to be lazy about it, any starting pitcher for Atlanta right now, you have to at least consider, because they're just playing so out of their minds. So it's interesting to me, given like the rookies in spring training, given how much organizational depth Atlanta has, that he's now the fifth starter for them. Obviously, Max Fried is coming back. He started to pitch again, and Max Fried replaces him if everybody else stays healthy. But in the short term, like if you assume he's the fifth starter coming out of the All-Star break, he lines up for Arizona the week after the All-Star break. Arizona is not an easy team to pitch against, but if he's on Atlanta pitching against Arizona, it's not a you could take a worse chance than that if you need wins.
Yeah, I agree. Like that pitch mix changes, I think it's pretty key for me to see that. And yeah, can use any fresh arm that you can until that point that it comes where he may leave a rotation or stay in. I guess probably hinges on Kyle Wright too coming back or when he does come back. But it's just and he's one of the guys I think that just stayed fresh in everyone's mind. He's the number one pick and he was big, you know, he's always a big ad in leagues when he was available. So this guy comes back in town and everyone is, you know, goes gaga over him. And Ashcraft, yeah, I haven't seen anything different. It's just, I tried to dig in and see, all right, well, why the results have changed from not giving up 10 runs a game, but just giving up one. And didn't really see anything different in his profile that he's doing. I know there was some that pitch misclassification thing, but it still doesn't matter what it classifies is. It's just how the results are how he pitches in general. Like, I don't get that point at all. It's just, you know, the results are the results of the results. And that's what it is. And that's not because of what, it's not like he knows, hey, batter, this is going to be a sinker. It might register as a cutter up on the scoreboard, but don't worry. That's, you know, they're deceiving you up there. All right, I just want to ask you guys.
Just while we're on the Reds, because I know we're trying to go long.
Yeah.
No, I like what do you think? Who are your calls on what is the Reds rotation look like on August 1st?
Ooh.
They have to do something, right? They owe it to their team, to their fans, to everybody, and their rotation is so bad. And like, look, at some point Lodolo and Green may come back, but they just need guys. So I'm so curious. They to me way more than Baltimore, way more than any other any team. Like, you add Lance Lynn and Lucas Giolito to that rotation, and if suddenly you do get Green and Lodolo back at anything like their potential, that's suddenly a real team, right? That lineup with those four starting pitchers is no joke. So I don't know that they can pull it off, but they need to do something. Any thoughts on the Reds rotation other than it's terrible right now, obviously?
Yeah, yeah, I think the one key for them is if they're willing to eat some salary, I think they could get some better pitching. I think they could pull Shane Bieber, and they wouldn't even really need to give up much. They have to be willing to eat some salary, and I think that they could piece together reasonably and still keep their top few prospects. And if they wanted Ohtani, they could.
They can make as good an offer as any team could possibly make for Ohtani.
Right, like they would just go do that. And I'm surprised some team hasn't, like, he hasn't been great, but they're not really out of it yet either with, like, Lorenzen of the Tigers. Like, I think you could kind of get a better fifth starter. Like, bringing him back there isn't the greatest thing. Maybe that isn't going to happen. Or Lorenzen, well, he wouldn't really have a choice, but I think they could kind of bottom feed and get some ones. But I think the biggest thing for them is, God, if they had Ohtani, that'd be awesome. It'd be so worth trading their top guys. Probably someone's going to be like, no, it's not. But trading Strand for him, oh, my gosh. I think we'd watch him every night of the week. It'd just become everyone's team.
Yeah, I'm watching him every night right now. Just, you know, it's a 20 out of 24. I mean, they're probably thinking in their heads, we don't need no pinching. We got this until Green and Lodolo come back. I think, what can we expect from them? August? Is that the timeline right now for both of them, possibly? The beginning of August, middle of August? I think, like Jeff said, they probably don't have to offer up too much for a Bieber. I don't know. Maybe the Guardians would willingly take Will Benson back, but Will Benson's been great for them. But I think any one of Giolito and Lynn would be great on this team for sure. I just, I don't know if they're going to be willing to move any of these guys. That's the question. They're playing so well right now. I guess Strand would be the one guy that you could dangle. Probably a perfect White Sox, right? Just like another DH guy. they could just have a whole team of DHs, like Vaughn, Strand, Berger, and Sheets, and say, here you go. Can we play four DHs in a lineup? I don't know. It'd be very interesting to see how they set this up. Maybe the Mets give him Scherzer and they get some prospects back. Who knows? I wouldn't mind that. All right, yeah. So what are you guys going to do during the All-Star break? What's your plans? How are you going to set yourself up for the next half season of success? You know, lay out what you're going to do.
I'll start. I'll look at a few of my teams and see what it is. I kind of did it a couple weeks ago, did like a hard look and where do I need to go if I need to start doing anything. I don't know if I may give them a quick look again. I've got some teams, like I quit saves on a team. I had 12 and an OC. I don't know how the hell I pulled that off. It was just like, all right, it's not going up. I'm not going to win the overall with this team. It's not good enough. So we'll try to at least pull some money off that way, try to get second. I don't think there's even a chance for first. It's one of the teams in the top. But the one thing I'm going to try to do is rewrite my PERA thing. I was going to change it for the book this year. There's some with enough StatCast stuff, I think I can improve it a little bit, especially.
Are you going to add another P to it?
Nope. The old one's gone. It's just going to be, I was just using ground ball rate. And the biggest thing is I think I can do the launch angles off of it a little bit better than what the stringers are when it's like, oh yeah, that's a ground ball or fly ball or whatever. That's the big improvement. And the other one is, I didn't include ball percentage, so that one's going in there too. So I just have to. I want to do it for the book, but I don't want to do it like once the season's done. I've kind of found out I don't ever want to look at baseball for like 3 or 4 weeks, but I still got to get the book out, and it's kind of this tug of war. So I'm just going to might start getting it done this year, and gives me a few days to get it started.
I'm proud of you, Jeff, doing the work, because I wasn't going to say anything about your PRA being kind of off because of ball percentage, but this is good that you're doing this work.
What about Rob? What are you going to do during the All-Star break? How are you going to dive into some like play evaluation that you hadn't got a chance to? Is there any specific thing you want to try to do and dedicate a day, like you know, time to?
Yeah, I'm going to start writing my book there, Rob. Nice. No, there's no book.
What's the title of the book?
The Other Process. I honestly, I usually kind of forget about baseball for a couple of days during the All-Star break. I don't want to be Debbie Downer. Like I love that people love the All-Star game. I don't really care about the All-Star game, even the home run competition. Like I'll have it in the background. I find it really not that interesting. And certainly the All-Star game itself is not that interesting to me. It was more like that. Again, now I know I sound like I'm 100 years old. When there wasn't interleague play, seeing the NL and the AL guys match up and like all that as a kid was awesome. Now I see it in real baseball and I care about real baseball. So I take a couple days break. I do spend time on my teams, diving into categories. I try to rerun projections for the whole league to like see where things should line up, and kind of stuff that on a typical Sunday I can do a cursory run of, but I just don't have the time to spend like a good 2-3 hours with each team. So I will use some of the free time doing that. I find the one strategic thing that is actionable, I find this Sunday's Fab one of the, there will be less people bidding on players this week than usual. There will be less action in Fab than usual this week. I think it's a really good week to try to sneak guys through to like set up your roster a little bit differently. Obviously, there's big unknowns. For a lot of teams, you'll have no idea who's pitching on the Friday, Saturday, Sunday coming off of it. So there are some people who will try to load up on relievers. So I want 9 active pitchers, and I don't know who they are yet. So I need to have 2 or 3 extra middle relievers so that I can swap guys out who are getting a few extra days rest coming that. And I understand that strategy. I'd much rather set up my roster for the second half. And if I have a dead spot on my pitching side of my roster for 3 days, it really is not the end of the world. Like you're not, hopefully, I know every stat matters. Every strikeout matters. You're micromanaging to an amazing amount if you really feel like this team can't afford to have for 3 days a dead spot in your pitching staff. I really want to set up for the next like for the next 2.5 months.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I was looking at that myself and wondering how many people are gonna, you know, the Padres and the Phillies have a doubleheader that short weekend after the All-Star break. So they'll have 4 games, and how many teams are just gonna, you know, try to gobble up players from those teams. And obviously those teams have highly rostered players on the offensive side of it, but you know, will someone speculate in the bullpen and on the Alvarados and the Stroms to pick up a win or a save? And I agree with you. I kind of think like me on my end, like I have one team that's doing pretty well in the overall right now in the main, but I got 48.5 save points. And I'm just like, I can't even fathom myself winning this tournament at all with that least save. So do I try to angle that up by, you know, again, going for those kind of guys to, you know, but I'd rather just, like you said, set myself up. Maybe there's a closer that's kind of, you know, hurt or like, you know, in the waiting that I can scoop up instead. But I'd rather look at the long view. I was trying to do that last week as well. That's why I was scooping up some stashes. All right.
People say, Rob, you can't win the overall without saves. It's actually been done once before when Morgan won the overall in 20, I want to say 13 or 14. He had almost no saves. Like he had one closer for like, I'm doing this from memory. It's like a decade ago already, but he didn't punt saves. He swung and missed on saves,
right,
and still won. So it is doable. It's just wicked hard. I mean, it's just math. the main has grown a lot since then. Like the number of teams and therefore the number of points have changed. In some ways, I would think that makes it easier to win an overall, not easy, easier to win, because if you're getting like 93-94% in every other category, it just translates into more total points. But I could be totally wrong on that. I don't know. I'd have to think it through. But it has been done before, so don't lose faith, Rob.
No, I'm not losing faith. It's and it wasn't a punt. It's called the Ryan Helsley. That's basically called the swing and miss. Yeah.
Also, at some point there will be a closer available in Fab this year. Like at some point there will be a fabable. Have you ever seen anything like this?
What's up, guys? It's the Poe Hitter, and I want to know if your fantasy baseball team seems like it's already toast already and you got nothing left to play for. You can always head over to Underdog Fantasy. It's the easiest place to play fantasy baseball right now. Right now until July 14th, Underdog has a live MLB best ball called the 7th-inning stretch. You could draft a team for the entire second half of the MLB season. It's the 7th-inning stretch. You draft your team. That's it. No waivers, no in-season management, no fab. You draft 20 players. 3 outfielders, 3 infielders, 3 pitchers, and 1 flex each week of the regular season. It's a cumulative scores for your starting lineup. Get started as simply go to underdogfantasy.com, sign up with the promo code PULLHITTER, and Underdog doubles your initial deposit up to $100. The 7th-inning stretch, $150K in total prizes. It's only $7 to enter, and that's it. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for... Wanted to ask you guys if you have one of those why draft, you know, player X when you can draft player Y, you know, this many spots later kind of moments. This year, like my guy, I think I look back at my draft champions and there was a moment early in the draft season where I was drafting Christian Walker. He was the first guy pop. I just really loved everything I saw about him. But then there was a moment where when I dug deeper into how many pitchers I wanted to start off with and how I wanted to construct my roster, it became more of like, I'll just, you know, go 2 rounds later and get a Mountcastle, or, you know, that waiting for Josh Naylor worked, of course, all the time. But I don't know if there was a guy, because I'm regretting not having more of Christian Walker, even in my Fab leagues. I don't have any of him because I pivoted to other first basemen and attacking a catcher or starting pitcher there. Do you have any of those, like a player regret of not having more of Jeff?
My regret, and I need to go back and look, was just, I think from last year, I was a little bit worried with Powers. I don't know if I went with more hitters or if I hit on him, but I just don't feel like I have enough pitching this year. And that was the one I wish I'd have just taken some more or taken him earlier. But I felt when I did that too, it was like, I haven't been able to find a good balance between the two. For position wise, the one thing I found I'm probably going to do is on suspect first baseman. They're like the one guy that teams just can start benching. Like Joey Meneses, it's like the DH, like they can go find someone else that can DH. I'm thinking about getting first baseman at least have to have a certain level of talent. And if they don't, even if it's like above league average or if it's good enough, if they struggle any bit, the team can find any player on their team to take those spots. And I think that's one thing is like, I want my first baseman or DH, if it's, you know, they may be qualified at first base, but it's effectively a DH, to have a certain level of talent so they kind of stay on the team and keep playing. And that's just kind of one change that I'm kind of mad that I went for a lot of like deeper first basemen and they're just not playing as much as I thought they would be.
You drafted Joey Meneses after what we did to him on the preview podcast talking about Joey Meneses. How did you do that, Jeff? Why did you do that?
I'm trying to think of the one I had too much. I'm going to just Josh Bell. Josh Bell. It wasn't. He's actually the one of. Can't even admit that I drafted. It's just like, what the hell is this?
I'm so happy. I can't even admit that I
drafted. It's so bad. But yeah. It's just one of those, and there's other ones that have kind of been that way. That I'm trying to think of that poor guy in the Cubs that like last year they had him around for a little bit and then he just disappeared. It was like
Schwindel.
Schwindel. Yeah. It's like those guys, I have to just get a base talent on the first baseman. I was going to actually have it as like a study, but if there isn't a study, it's just one I'm not going to. I have to have this good of a first baseman or else I'm just, I need to push them up because they can just easily be replaced.
It's a very easy rule, Jeff. Don't draft bad players unless their glove is good enough that they have no choice but to keep them in the lineup. And there's no first baseman whose glove is good enough that they have to keep bad players in the lineup.
Josh Bell, that's a name that triggers some bad stuff for me. I steered away this year because last year he was just a roller coaster, and I think like, all right, I'm not going that way this year. But maybe that just pushes up, you know, the Pete Alonzos and the Freddie Freemans, right? I mean, Freddie Freeman, it's just that's a good way to have a strong base for your fantasy team is go Freddie Freeman early, and then you're good at first base. Guy plays every day, and he's fantastic. Rob, do you have any player that you've wished maybe, you know, you kind of swapped out that?
Yeah, I didn't draft Ronald Acuna anywhere, guys, and I wish I had some Ronald Acuna right now. Right. Like I have two teams that I have Helsley also on. Rob, two of five teams, and he's just been freaking a nightmare because I've been really good of late, or lucky, a little bit of both, at nailing closers. And everything is better if closers are off the table. Like if you just don't have to think about them. I have lots of Romano. I have lots of Diaz this year. But the two teams with Helsley, with no saves to be gotten anywhere, are just killer. I really thought Daniel Hudson was going to be my solution to those teams. Not so much as it turns out.
Another injury for Daniel Hudson. That's terrible. I saw one tweet and comment about Jordan Romano. I saw you mixed in there, like not being reliable, and I was like, what's happening? And
I think every fan base in baseball, unless you are a Yankees fan during the Mariano Rivera era, is convinced that their closer is the shittiest closer in baseball and is on the verge of blowing every game, and every team is convinced this sucks. Like last year, Mets fans, it's like, oh, I know Diaz, like he's incredible, but like how long is this going to go for? Every team. So Jays fans are convinced Romano, because he's lost a couple of games where he's come in tied games and give up a run, blah, blah, blah. He's not an elite closer. Maybe if it was our eighth inning guy, we could get a real closer to replace. And it's like, who are you talking about? Like who, what hater are we going to get? Like there is no closer that you're going to replace Romano with, but that's how fans think.
Right. Yeah, totally true. That's how it's a spirited debate about players. They just really can't get past anything they do well.
Jeff, hey, like I
– Rob.
Yeah.
Just wait. Derek's talking to me right now.
Oh.
He'd be willing to come on and talk about it. Let me get his email.
Right now?
Right now.
I'll DM him.
Okay.
For my co-host, Jeff Zimmerman, who you can find on Twitter at Jeff W. Zimmerman, and Rob Silver, catch him at Rob Silver. I'm Rob DiPietro. Find me at Deadpool Hitter. You can also catch me hosting the Pull Hitter podcast, as well as producing content on the Pull Hitter Patreon. If you want to come check it out, they have Patreon has a free one-week trial for my entry tier, which is the $5 tier called the Meatball tier, and you get these other two Launch Angle podcasts that we produce monthly, as well as the other podcast that I do daily reviewing the box scores, and come check it out for a week. We have a wonderful Discord community that's been the huge bonus of this Patreon, and you'll find the rest of this episode where we talk to Derek Hardy about the ABS systems and how his projection system is handling that, as well as when he expects his stuff model to be ready to be incorporated into a bat to make the bat X for pitchers. So stay tuned and come check it out. The rest of the podcast on patreon.com. Search for Pull Hitter and you can find me there. We thank everyone for listening to the podcast and leave a rating and review and all the support that we have received via email and Twitter DMs. We appreciate all the support and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast.